Welcome to Turn a Page, the official comic book club for Nerd Initiative. Each week, the NI Bullpen will be covering the world of comics, talking to creators, deep diving into some fantastic stories, and much more. Now let's hand it over to the team and turn a page.
Welcome to a very special edition of Turn a Page, Nerd Initiative's Comic Book Club. I am your host. My name is Ken M. You know me as the host of the ODPH podcast, but I'm also Nerd Initiative's Comics Editor-in-Chief. Joining me for this special interview, you know him as the guy behind the chair there on Turn a Page each and every week, but he's also the head of the 3FN podcast. He's also the head of Wrestling Night Live every Thursday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Nerd Initiative. Please give a warm welcome to Rich.
It is nice to be in front of the camera instead of behind the camera, and also nice to be on a show that isn't just wrestling. However, I still figured out a way for wrestling to be on comics.
Yes.
Well, technically you did, and these fine gentlemen did, but I'm glad to be here.
Well, there was a story that came across my way that everybody needs to go check out on Comixology Originals because it dropped this week. Combining the worlds of pro wrestling and crime and mystery, there's so many elements going on. And this tag team definitely is making sure that you're going to have a 1-2-3 count in your pull list when it drops in print eventually. But in the meantime, you definitely need to go get it digitally. Please give a welcome to the show, writer Clay McCormick and artist Ricardo Lopez Ortiz from Hard Style Juice. Gentlemen, thank you so much for taking the time out and talking with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
And I definitely appreciate the old school Shinsuke hand motions. I wish he'd bring those back more often.
Yes.
He should.
Oh, he definitely should. And you know what? I think we're going to have a lot of wrestling fans checking out this book because this was one that completely blew me away when it came across my way, combining a lot of different elements of that pro wrestling world into the story. So, gentlemen, tell me, how did this whole story come to be?
Well, I had been wanting to do a wrestling comic for a while, and I just hadn't really quite figured out what the story was yet. And then about 5 or so years ago, Ricardo had done this drawing. We've been friends for a long time, and he had done this drawing for a sketchbook he was putting out of this female deathmatch wrestler, you know, all busted up, cigarette hanging out of her mouth, punching boxing glove with thumbtacks all over, just looking really, really wrecked. And I know this sounds overdramatic, but the second that I saw this, the whole story just like jumped into my head. To the point where like I was texting him the minutes later, going like, I have this idea. What is this from? Is this picture from anything? Can we do this? Do you want to be a part of this? And it's about 85% unchanged since that first rambling text message that I sent him.
Yeah, it's surprising how it stayed pretty much similarly. We just kind of like change a few characters here and there and like how the plot evolves, but it's basically the same idea from start to finish almost.
Yeah, something about that image was just, it just grabbed me so immediately that I was like, I know exactly what this is, exactly what the story is, and you know, let's do it when we find time. It took us 5 years to find time, but we did it.
Well, I'm glad you definitely found time. Wrestling and comics have always had a unique history. Why do you think the genre connects so well with comic fans, that being the pro wrestling genre?
Well, it comes down to like larger than life characters, heroes and villains, like, you know, good versus evil, the whole spectacle of it where you got like, you know, these crazy, like, you know, battles that like, you know, seem to go on forever, like, you know, on pages, you know, same can be said about like the most like epic, like, you know, wrestling matches where, you know, there's these like amazing fights, like, you know, Okada and Omega and stuff like that, where, you know, it's like these 40, you know, 60 minute like masterpieces. Mm. And you know, in comics is kind of the same. It all leads to like that final confrontation of like these two characters that finally with everything on the line. And that's, I think that's like the big crossover there where it's like you see it a lot in with a lot of wrestlers that, you know, paying homage to like their favorite comic book characters with their gear, sometimes like what they call their moves and stuff like that. It's all like references to like either comics or video games. So like, it's just like a big, like Venn diagram, like, you know, it's just a big circle that like,
big circle, yeah.
They all like, you know, are similar.
Yeah. It just somehow feeds into one another.
Yeah.
Somehow two people in a ring in a VFW in like Poughkeepsie can manage to generate the same energy as Superman and Doomsday in the middle of Metropolis, you know, like if the story's there and the match is there, you're in it as much as you're into any $200 million action movie spectacular, you know? And I've been a wrestling fan for a long time, as I'm sure we all are, have been. And I'd fallen off for a bit. And when I came back to it, I got really into the indie scene, because it was right when that was really starting to blossom, and all, you had all these great people all over the country, all over the world, really. And what I kind of clicked into as I was going to more indie shows is kind of how similar the life of a professional wrestler is to comics, like comic creators. Obviously, our job is a lot less physically taxing, but the idea of you're kind of going city to city, and every match or every show is kind of like a convention, a mini convention, because you've got your table full of merch that you're putting out there. You're trying to show off what you do, but in their case, it's amazing feats of strength and agility instead of, you know, just sitting behind a table and drawing Batman for 8 hours. But
yeah,
yeah, it was something about that. The fact that these people are out there grinding it out to do what they love, and what they love is essentially being real life superheroes, really kind of attracted me. And I wanted to try and get that, some of that feel into the book.
And I'm just going to take a minute to say, I think you did a great job with that. I previously, for those who listen to Wrestling Night Live, I worked in the backstage office capacity, if you will, in independent wrestling for over a decade.
Oh, no kidding.
So like, awesome. Your love for the indies and is kind of, I've always had that love for the indies and doing stuff in independent wrestling. And like, so to see on a book, you know, you see the smaller crowds, but the thing is, those smaller crowds can still generate the energy. Like this past week, I was at WrestleMania 40 in Philadelphia, and it, you know, being there is amazing. It's electric. But that same feeling I had, using a GCW reference, I had for Homecoming a couple years ago when Matt Cardona took on Nick Gage in the infamous death match. You know, the first death match, the death of Zack Ryder, if you will, happened.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that same amount. I felt it in that smaller venue, even though it was packed, as I did in that big venue. And it's cool to see somebody paying homage to that smaller venue instead of just the large, you know, glitz and glamour that is something like WWE or AEW or something that's a lot bigger of a production, if you will.
Sure. Thanks. Yeah. And, you know, also I think it gives us places to go too, you know, because if you start at the top, where do you go? But we're starting in a smaller independent kind of thing. And so we can go to a WWE type production. We can go to Japan. We can go to these places if we want to, if we're lucky enough to keep getting to do the book.
Awesome. I hope you do.
Oh, absolutely. I think this has so many elements I could touch upon too. So even for the wrestling fans coming in, but at its core, it's really about family, and especially the bond between Ray and Mona for issue number one. How important was that to connect to the audience that this is more than just a wrestling book?
That's the whole thing. Like the whole story is getting across, you know, it's tough, right? Because you have 22 pages, 25 in our case for the first issue, to get people invested in everything that's going to come after this. Mm. And so the key to this story is this relationship with Mona and her brother, Ray. Ray being the superstar of the family, Mona being the one who loves the business, she helps out the family business, but she's kind of interested in doing other stuff. And in order for her to get pulled back into this, that relationship needs to be strong enough that when, you know, what happens, you are right there with her,
right,
wanting her to kind of figure out what's going on and figure out what has happened to her brother.
Yeah,
100%. That was, I felt like, the most important thing that we had to like nail. And I think that was like the thing that we kind of like had the most like edits on, like where we kept going back and forth on like, how can we make their bond feel genuine and also feel important, just like a couple of pages, you know? So that was, I think, what we worked the hardest on that first issue. And I'm glad that it seems that it came across.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I definitely thought it came across well. And once again, wrestling's built on storylines. Comics are also built on storylines. But for me, being the wrestling guy, and I kind of touched on this before, I noticed in the book, of course, the first thing that jumps out to me is there's a lot of deathmatch stuff, which is a niche audience mm-hmm. for the wrestling community. I find myself to be a member of that audience. Same. I just mentioned that a minute ago. So with doing that, was there any hesitation on portraying any of that storyline wise, or even difficulties in illustrating, you know, the world of kind of deathmatch wrestling? I mean, obviously doing it on a comic book page is a little easier than, you know, going into the ring and actually taking a light tube over the head. But, you know, what did you guys going into it? How did you kind of maneuver that?
Well, one of the first images I had in my head, or sequences that I had in my head for this, was, you know, wrestling is, there is reality, and then there's wrestling reality. And then the line between those two things can get very blurred, depending on, you know, what matches you're watching, who's working, who they're working with, et cetera, et cetera. And so I had this thought that it would be really cool if you have a scene where you're depicting a death match and the crowd's going crazy and everything, but what they don't know, the crowd doesn't know, is what they're watching is an interrogation. And so we get to something like that a little bit later, but the idea that what's happening in the ring is very real, but what's happening outside the ring, or I should say what the people are looking at, they think it's all part of the show when it's actually close, a little bit closer to life and death than they think. And so that sort of playing with reality, playing with what's real, that's what really attracted me to the deathmatch thing. And also, you know, it's a comic book, so you got to kind of jack things up a little bit. So, you know, but for the character of Mona, as she kind of goes down this road, that also gives her places to go, because she kind of slots in to this deathmatch spot where she's not really working regular matches. And how far is that taking her? And what is her, she has to decide whether she wants to go one route or the other. You know, it gives you places to go a little bit.
Absolutely. I can see that. Like I said, the cool part about when you said the blur the lines, I mean, in reality, in wrestling, death matches do actually blur the lines between what is real and what is not real, because obviously, you know, it's very real getting hit with a light tube. It's very real getting put through a pane of glass. All those things are very real, which to a lot of wrestling fans, or even people who, you know, are on the outside and aren't really fans, it's hard to explain to them that, yeah, I know all this is, you know, a work. And even these guys, yeah, they are working, but at the same time, they're really doing this to themselves. So it's kind of like an interesting, so like to blur that line is actually the best way I've ever put a death match. I might steal that for when I'm trying to explain that to my non-death match Rocky fans.
100%.
Rick, I didn't mean to steal the whole thunder there, but do you want to talk about illustrating that stuff?
I think like the hardest part about illustrating that stuff is like not going all out just from the beginning and being like, all right, well, let's throw in pizza cutters and thumbtacks and like, you know, kendo sticks and tables and glass. And, you know, so that was the hardest part that we kind of like had to like, well, we're going to do this later, so let's not do any of this now. And so that was kind of like some of the discussions that we had, because, you know, I just do the sketches and be like, all right, let's barbed wire and like, let's do all this stuff. And like, wait, we can save that for later. Let's just build it up, you know? So I think that was the hardest part, which is not a hard thing at all.
I would be like, I'm automatically putting in the skewers and everything just because I'm just, let's go over the top.
We did manage to get those into the first.
Yeah, issue. We got the skewers.
Yeah, I saw that. I was just like, I instantly was like, yes. Like, because, you know, I'm not used to seeing that in outside media outside of, you know, wrestling. So it's kind of like, oh, that's awesome to see as a wrestling fan as well.
Well, you know, that's the other thing. My influences for this story was Twin Peaks, in that in Twin Peaks, you have a singular murder that is the inroad to this entire community that has its own relationships and has its own way of functioning. And I was thinking about that in terms of wrestling, because wrestling is it's really a small community when all is said and done, you know, it's global, but they all know each other. You know, the guys who work the biggest shows are working the smallest shows too, for a lot of the times. And so I really liked this idea of getting into this community that has its own way of dealing with things. It even has its own language or vocabulary. You try to hit that stuff without it feeling too fake and too voyeuristic on the part of the people who are making the book and stuff. But, you know, you want to be honest but not be too over the top with those references. But yeah, that's it. I just find it to be such an interesting community.
Yeah, well, it's funny when you said the thing about like practicing and stuff and their own codes and everything. We used to tell the young guys all the time when you're, you know, you got to be nice to everybody because the same people you see on the way up are the same people you see back on the way down. And it's always kind of like trying to humble yourself to make sure that, like, you know, today, you know, you might be erasing, but then tomorrow you might be back in this same VFW hall performing for the same.
If only Ray Castro knew that lesson.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? There's a lot of guys who have fallen victim to that over the years as well, I'm sure, as you guys know. So it's kind of an interesting like ride and drive.
Yeah, no, it definitely plays out like that too. And especially when we're seeing the action in the ring and the wrestlers too. Was there any certain wrestlers or personalities that were used as inspiration for Ray or any other characters in this issue?
For Chris, it was a lot of like Joshi wrestlers like Starlight Kid and also some of the old school like Joshis like for like deathmatch like Megumi Kudo and then as well some of like Mexico like Rey Mysterio Jr. as well was an inspiration for her. And then with Rey, it was more like people like younger versions of like either Kenny Omega, Seth Rollins, people like that, that had like that, like kind of like flair that you saw them when they were young and you were like, dang, this person is really freaking good. And they have the look and the flair of it. So that was kind of like who I was kind of like modeling him after.
Yeah.
Which was really important. I mean, I think Rick nailed it because again, you only have so many pages and Ray, you only get a little smattering of Ray. And so we needed to make sure that this guy popped immediately. And I think Rick did a great job.
I agree. I thought that it looked phenomenal as far as like you, if you were to like, obviously it's a comic, but if you were to like put that person into the real world and like that would be what you were looking for a star, you know what I mean? And that's, you have to encapsulate some of that. I thought it was very, very good. And I like the Joshi influence as well. I thought that's pretty awesome, you know, especially now that it's becoming more watched, you know, Joshi wrestling, you know, thankfully, you know, the things from Stardom and, you know, the influence of Forbidden Doors and AEW and stuff have actually kind of moved an American audience to now know who Joshi wrestlers are, which, you know, 10 years ago, I bet you most, you know, American wrestling fans wouldn't be able to name, but not even one, even though Asuka was already in WWE, AKA Kana. Yeah. So that's kind of interesting now that that's been moving on.
Up until about probably 10 years ago when I got back into wrestling, the only Japanese wrestler that I knew, legitimately Japanese, not like Yokozuna Japanese, was Takemichi Noku, the only one.
I still love Takemichi Noku. Oh, yeah. Because his promos are great. Now, is it later in his career, him being a manager, top tier stuff. Just throwing it out there. Let's have some fun with the wrestling stuff since you guys both like wrestling. I got to know who are some of your favorite wrestlers you're watching. You can say all time right now, you know, mix it up a little bit, but who's really getting you to turn the TV on now and even in the past?
Rick's got a deeper bench than I do, so I'll go first. The guy who what got me into wrestling full stop when I was a kid was the Ultimate Warrior because of, you know, I was a comics kid and at the time I was desperately grasping for anything that was even vaguely comic book related, and the Ultimate Warrior was just literally like a comic book character come to life, and so he kind of really got me into it. And then of course I got into the guys like Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, and all the technical guys who are a lot better. The guys I like now, man, I love Will Ospreay. He's really really great. You know, I had been following him a little bit in Japan and stuff, but I hadn't really been exposed to him too much until he's come over. He's fantastic. Kenny's fantastic. I remember I watched Omega Okada. I think it was Okada, like two or three, from my hotel room in Jamaica when my girlfriend and I were down there for a wedding. And so I was just like, do we have time? And she's like, yeah, fine.
Such great matches.
Yes.
Yeah. Why don't you go, Rick? There's so many to choose from.
Yeah. So when I was a kid, it was Sting was like one of the first guys I saw that I was like, dang, this rules. So I think I got into it right around the time when like he started to turn into Crow Sting. Okay. So like that was like, you know, for me, that was like, this is the best thing ever, you know? And I really like Bret Hart a lot. And then I also remember when they started bringing the Joshis to WCW, and I remember seeing Bull Nakano and Akira Hokuto on like WCW, and just being like, who are these people? Because their look was so different from everybody else on the show. And they were putting these like banger matches with like Medusa and stuff. And it was like unreal to me just seeing like, especially like Bull Nakano, because she had like the big hair and like all the face paint and stuff.
Right.
So that's how I got into like Joshi stuff like early on. But then then as well, like Juventud Guerrera, I loved Juventud in WCW. I was a big WCW kid. I didn't watch a lot of WWF at the time until like Stone Cold got really big, so I watched that. But it was that when I was younger. And then when WCW like got bought off, that's when I kind of like stopped watching. So when I went into like middle school, high school, so I kind of stopped watching. I would watch like the occasional WrestleMania and stuff with like friends. But then like right now, you know, like for me, it's like Takeshita is amazing. Omega is incredible. Really excited to see what Shota Umino is going to do.
Yes.
I think he has a ton of potential to be like really freaking good. Then in the Joshi's run, Asami is amazing. And then I love Maki Ito. She's hilarious.
Yeah, she's excellent. One of my personal favorites.
Yeah, she's amazing. I got to see her and Speedball Mike Bailey live here in Brooklyn, and it was awesome. Yeah. It was so good.
What is her name? And, the Princess of Shit or something?
Yeah.
And she has a million, although she did lose some of her titles to Minoru Suzuki recently. I do believe he is the cutest in the room currently.
Yes.
And he's also the princess
in the world now. Yeah.
Yeah. So Minoru Suzuki is now, go figure, the cutest in the room. No, I have a similar, like, because I grew up watching, you know, I'm from the Northeast, WWE. Then, of course, I went into like ECW. I did watch WCW because I just, as a kid, I was such a nerd for everything wrestling that I just soaked it all in. It didn't matter what it was. I just soaked it all in. And then, like, that's how I got into Japanese wrestling, because, like, WCW, watching Sting and Muda. You know, like that was my first, like, But then what really got me to buy a tape was I saw Jushin Thunder Liger. And the first New Japan tape I ever saw was Best of the Super Juniors. I do believe it was like 1990. And it was like Blue Dolphin and Jushin Thunder Liger. So it's like when you're telling people like all these legendary names and they're like, that's what got me in. And they're like, Blue Dolphin got you into like wrestling, like Japanese wrestling. And then, you know, Muda was there. And it was really weird for me because he wasn't always the great Muda. Sometimes he was Kenji Muda. Yeah. So it was kind of like, you're like, in the States, I only see him as this guy. So like, I can completely agree with you guys. It's just the big characters. And then going forward, you know, working in independent wrestling. So then I've always kept my eyes on the indies and seeing where guys went. And, you know, I was blessed to work for a bigger company in upstate New York called 2CW. And we had guys like Brody Lee and Kevin Owens, well, at the time, Kevin Steen and, you know, Sami Zayn, or, well, it was El Generico. I heard that they're friends. Was I'm not quite sure.
From what Sami Zayn
says. Actually, El Generico is Manning an orphanage in Tijuana, Mexico, according to Sami Zayn.
That's right.
He's a baby face and he doesn't lie to us. So I have no problem believing that's what El Generico has done in retirement. To hear you guys like be fans, and like obviously it came across on the pages. So I'm like, I'm gonna be reading all of this anyway. So is just kind of my wheelhouse. I'm like, yes. So when he brought this up, I was instantly like, I want in. Like, I'm usually the guy behind the scenes for the comic stuff, and I'm like, I kind of want in for this.
Oh yeah, no, this the minute this came across my way, I was like, Rich, you need to read this like now, because we always go to GCW shows. I mean, we went to Cage of Death or Cage of Survival. I need to remember Cage of Survival down into the showboat there, and I mean, that was just such an experience. Like, you want to talk about the emotion being in a building? Like, there's nothing like the showboat and GCW for the indies. And like how crazy it is to go to an indie show. I remember seeing Kevin Owens versus one AJ Styles at our local Legion Hall. And the Young Bucks were also on the card too.
Yeah.
And Nick Jackson actually took the picture of me with Kevin Owens, which is still like the most real thing. And in like my wrestling wheelhouse. But it goes to show about like how they can connect on that level, and like going to an indie show and then seeing everybody take off. And it kind of mirrors what's going on in the story too, because you can so see what Ray's story is going, you know, was on trajectory for, and then obviously what happens in the book, and you know, where that's going to take everybody from here. Like that just, it goes to show about how multi-layered this story is. So there is literally something for everybody here. And one thing I'm wondering too, is after this is done, are we going to stay in the Castro universe? Are we expecting maybe some more stories coming out of this?
Hopefully, yes. Hopefully more stories. Definitely in the Castro universe. Mona, and I don't know if it's really a spoiler to say that in issue two, she becomes Chris Castro.
Okay.
Names become kind of a big hallmark, because names are in wrestling are very fungible. And
huge.
Some names mean more than others and stuff. The idea was always to kind of make this an ongoing thing, because one of the things that interested me from a storytelling perspective is, as an independent wrestler, she would be going to a different town every week. And so who knows what she's getting into there? You know, there's a certain, I was thinking it's weird to talk about it like this, because it used to be such the norm for things, but comics or television, but I was thinking about like older shows like The Incredible Hulk or something like that, where it's David Banner has a thing that he's after, but he's also on the road.
Right.
So every episode he ends up in a new town. He might be working on the cure to being the Hulk there. He might not be, but what he's going to do is he's going to end up fighting a bear. So, you know, so you can the drive of the story being Mona and her obsession with what happened to her brother leads her into things that might be related to that, might not be, you know. I just felt like it was a really open world for her to kind of to send her through.
Yeah. And I think that's something that's going to be connected. Like I say, I after reading issue one, I'm just going like, I hope this is going more, because like, I am just locked in about the characters that we haven't even like touched upon, especially King Castro himself. We've only got a little small taste, and obviously his story has got to play out more. So after this, I'm assuming we're talking a print run possibly from Dark Horse. Usually Comixology kind of goes that way.
That's what we've been told. Yeah.
Hopefully. Oh, excellent.
As far as we know. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll definitely be picking up the print as well as just reading it now. I'm just telling you guys, like, listen, I can, this is an opportunity for me to be a fanboy a little bit. So this is,
oh,
great.
Go right ahead, man. I know.
Well, like, you know, it does. Go ahead.
You bring up King Castro. There's so much stuff that's kind of was flowing out of this that we had to kind of trim, because we only have 5 issues at the moment. Like I think it was issue 2 or 3. I had written this sequence where King talks to his daughter about the first time he became a champion, and how he who he beat for the championship, and how he was a bad champion because he wasn't taking it seriously and he was too caught up on the road life. And it was a nice story. And then I kind of had this idea that it would lay some groundwork for something later. But it's just like, we just don't have room to do that here. But all of these characters do have their own lives. One character in the first issue who doesn't get a ton of play is Candy Rockets, who's kind of the number 2 for King Castro at the promotion. And she, later on in the series, you get a little bit of a taste of her backstory that I hope will be really enticing to see what her deal is going on. So there's all these characters have so many stories you can pull from and create. And it's it's just kind of built into the world.
No, that's awesome. I definitely need to see more of this too. And especially with going digitally first, is there any different approaches that you both take in going to a digital story first and then knowing it's going to come to print, or is it kind of business as usual?
It's a little different in that for the most part, because it's digital, we had to there's no double page spreads because the way the readers work.
Right.
I don't know how it looks on a Kindle, but then I saw it because I looked at it on the Amazon website, and it's 2 pages. So I was like, damn it, we could have done double page spreads. But I don't know if on the Kindle, if it's single one page at a time. So I don't know. So that's why we were we can't do big double page spreads. So we had to adjust some stuff because of that. But other than that, it's basically the same as any other comic book.
Yeah. The lead up to the release was a little bit different, because usually you're kind of starting to push things a few months out because of, you know, the books need to be ordered and a couple issues in advance and all that kind of stuff. But this one, like the book was announced on April 4th and it came out on the 16th. So it was a pretty concentrated push, which I don't know if that's better or worse. It's definitely different for me.
Yeah, because there's no like pre-orders or anything. It's just out. So you just
like wide open to the world. Like you don't have to worry about final order cutoffs. It's just kind of like, here it is and boom. And I mean, that's just something with the digital age of comics, you know, the digital age of everything period is just, here now. And, you know, just kind of curious about like how that goes about, because especially like the process of creating it, you know, it could throw a factor into like, you know, where a story goes or not. But I know when reading this, I was like, this is absolutely fantastic. And you can definitely tell like, you know, the heart is into it and just capturing that world and really giving fans just like a small taste of like what's more to come.
Well, as far as creating it goes, it's really interesting creating comics, I think. And Rick, I'm sure you can speak to this as well, because you're kind of working in a vacuum for a long time. And with something like this, I think we had more issues finished than is generally usual before they started coming out. Would you say that's true, Rick?
Yeah, usually. Yeah.
Yeah. And so we're a number of issues deep into this thing before it even gets announced. And so you're kind of only working on your own team's view of it. And you have no idea if it's going to land. You have no idea if anybody's going to be into it. And so when it comes out, you get so excited because you want people to see it. You know, we've been working on this for like 2 years because of, you know, various scheduling things and whatnot. And so sitting on this thing for 2 years and you're always kind of thinking, this is good. I think this is good. I think this is good. And then finally comes out and people respond to it so positively is just, it's a weird ride. You know, it's a weird roller coaster.
Yeah,
definitely. My final question, this upcoming weekend is AEW Dynasty. And of course, we'll be doing a pre-show and post-show for the pay-per-view as we normally do. However, I'd like to see if you gentlemen are A, watching the show, which I'm assuming yes, especially with a big match like Bryan Danielson versus Will Ospreay on the show. And do you have any predictions or anything that you think is going to go down this upcoming Sunday in AEW Dynasty?
I'll definitely be watching. I think like right now, I think AEW is like my top promotion that I watch the most. I'm definitely very into the build to this pay-per-view. I think they've done a really good job, so I'm excited for like a lot of the matches that are going down. I think we're gonna see Swerve get crowned as champion, which I'm really hyped for. I think he's done an like amazing job with like his character and like he just keeps getting better and better. That angle they did where he just like stomped all the security guards was
such a crazy spot.
Yeah, it was so cool. His matches with Hangman were also incredible. And I'm really excited to. I think he's gonna come out the champion. So, and then, you know, I'm just also excited to just kind of be with my jaw on the ground for like probably 40 minutes while watching Ospreay and Danielson do some of the craziest things you've ever seen. But I'm also excited for like the women's matches because they've done a really good job also building those up, which has been like kind of like failing in AEW for a while. But they slowly, I feel like sneakily, in my opinion, I think sneakily they kind of have the best women's division like going on in the States for my taste and what they're doing with the characters and the matches that they're putting on lately. So I'm excited for see how those go down as well. Hopefully they get a good amount of time.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for.
The women's divisions have been amazing. Like that's one of the things that really got me back into it, to see see the women actually getting time and so much talent coming through. Like my probably full stop favorite wrestler is right now is Becky Lynch, because watching her whole arc has really been amazing. I think seeing this weekend, I'm really looking forward to Ospreay and Danielson is going to be like, that's one of those ones. I actually texted Rick earlier because I didn't totally realize that was happening. I was like, this is going to be unbelievable, right? And he's like, No, it's going to be unbelievable. It's so fun because you got, even talking about comics again, it's like, are you a Marvel kid or are you a DC kid? You know, are you a WCW kid or WWE kid or AEW, WWE? So it's so much fun to get into all that stuff. I wish Keith Lee was back.
Yeah, I think he's hurt or something.
Yeah.
Last I knew it was a shoulder injury. Possibly. I don't.
The last I heard was shoulder. Yes.
Yeah. I'm super stoked. I love everything. And when wrestling's going off well, you know, I try to stay out of the internet tribalistic stuff because you know.
That's so weird.
It's so weird.
So dumb. Yeah.
It's one thing if you're DC or if you're Marvel, if you will, to use that analogy that you use.
Yeah.
But it's not like, you know, I don't get like wanting, you know, if I'm a DC guy, I don't get wanting Marvel to fail and vice versa. Just like I don't get,
right.
You know, I was just at WrestleMania, but I'm intending on also going to All Out. You know what I mean? Like, I've seen both shows live. I've gone to see Dynamite. I've gone to see Raw. You know what I mean? And I grew up in WWE, but I can admit, especially when we first started doing wrestling podcasts, when he got me into doing wrestling podcasts, there was years of just crapping all over WWE and all their bad decisions. And it's finally nice that they're to where they are, where they're putting on a great show. But the reason why is because there's other things out there. You know, when you have a monopoly, you don't have that brushing up against other. I don't agree with Tony Khan. I don't think the wrestling companies should hate each other. I know the wrestlers in the companies don't hate each other. So that's one thing I won't agree with. I think that it's good though to have a nice little healthy competition going on, and if you can keep feeding that, that's fine. But the internet discourse sometimes gets me out of it, and then you hear people like disparage people, so I kind of stay out of that world. I mean, I give my thoughts and my opinions, and then I try to stay away from that. But I think that one of the things I'm most excited for in AEW, outside of obviously this weekend, outside of Bryan Danielson and Will Ospreay, because who can't be excited about that, is and Ken has also agreed with this for a while, I think Julia Hart's one of the MVPs of that company. So I just like seeing that next step and just keep building that character and where we go from there. So I'm with you guys on that.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see what how Willow is going to do same. Because, you know, she's from the Long Island area. And so I would see her a lot in, like, same with Statlander. I would see her a lot in, like, the indie shows around here when they were, like, much younger and stuff. Same with, like, Alex Reynolds and John Silver. And, like, so it was really cool to get to see all those people now, like, slowly, like, either get signed and, like, then get these amazing spotlight matches and stuff like that, and just see the evolutions of like how they used to look when they were like young and like their bodies change and stuff like that. It's really fun to see that.
Yeah, it's so much fun. That's my favorite thing about going to the indie shows, is seeing people who a couple years later are on top of the world. You know, like I remember I saw Orange Cassidy and at that time Walter in like Melrose, Massachusetts, not knowing who either of these guys were, and just being like, and then seeing them a couple of years later, I'm like, oh, it's the sunglasses guy. That guy's amazing. You know? So it's so much fun. I saw Keith Lee at a small show. I didn't know who the hell he was. And all I remember is like, do you remember that like big guy who was amazing? It's like, yeah, he's on AEW now. You kind of don't realize what you're seeing until you see it again on a bigger scale sometimes.
I agree. Like Orange Cassidy is weird, because I remember when Orange Cassidy wore tights.
Yeah,
like I remember when he was just
when he was like Fire Ant,
and then also Fire Ant at the same time. But he also just did the regular, and he was a great wrestler, and he still is. But the gimmick has just become what the gimmick is, and it's great. And I mean, I'm glad he's gotten it over. We had that moment this past week, or sorry, 2 weeks now ago. Sorry, I'm with Ring of Honor, Billy Starks. I've watched her get GCW.
Yeah.
She was like 15 years old, and then she wins the inaugural ROH Women's Television Title, and you're just like, that's amazing. I've watched her since she was, just a little kid getting in the ring and going, this is what I want to do, to being successful. And I just think that's, and I agree, that's just the best part of wrestling is that great story. And I think if you worry about the negative stuff too much, you miss that great story.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
And when you see those people on their way up, when they get to the big show, there's a party that's always going, give this guy a shot. Give this girl a shot. You like they end up kind of in the background, not really doing anything, and you're like, I know how good these people are. As soon as they give them the opportunity, they're gonna blow the roof off the place. And they usually do if they're gonna give them the opportunity.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's one of the great things about indie wrestling. And as I say, we're gonna see a lot of those superstars on AEW this week. So definitely everybody check the pay-per-view out. My last question for you guys is, if you could pick a dream opponent for Ray and Mona, who would it be and why?
Rick, you wanna go first?
Yeah. For Ray, it'll 100% be Kenny Omega, just because, like, I haven't told this to Clay, And I'll Uh-oh. Tell him later. I don't want to spoil it or anything of an You're idea pregnant. That I have for something. If it gets to happen at some point and we get to do more stuff of this. Yeah, Rey and Kenny Omega, just because I think they would have, you know, we were kind of like similar styles, but I think they would bring like the more like animalistic side of each other. Mm. It would be a very brutal, like hard hitting match. And I think it would be a classic, 100% a classic. And then for Mona, it would either be either Akira Hokuto or Manami Toyota. Like that would be the, you know, to, in my opinion, the two greatest women's wrestlers of all time. There's like, if you think women's wrestling is good right now, go watch some All Japan Women's from the 90s and you'll be like, oh my God, none of the people wrestling now, men or women, can hold these women's jocks. Like it is insane how influential those 90s matches are and how hard those women went. They'll make stuff that's happening now look like child's play in both divisions. It's insane. Like go watch Hokuto versus Kandori and it's like a 40 or 50.
His enthusiasm caused him to
Yes, but I agree with that. I agree 100% with that, the statements. What was your dream matches?
I always love the ones where it's you've got a little bit of a style clash. And so for someone like Ray, who's such a high flyer and probably a technical wizard, I would love to see him go up against someone bigger than him, like Brock Lesnar or like even someone like an Andre the Giant or something, where it's just two very different looks and styles. You know, that's one of the great things about wrestling is all that stuff is believable. And for Mona, I would say something similar to what Ricardo was saying, but my frame of reference isn't as deep, but I would say someone like a Bull Nakano or something like that. And that's, I would say, I don't know if I would call that a spoiler, but for what we have planned later on, she might run into some people like that who kind of slap some sense in her a little bit that she's not quite ready for. But
it's awesome.
It's going to be a fun journey to get there. And like we say to our listening audience, to our viewing audience, you definitely want to make sure you're checking out Hard Style Juice. You get a chance to go to Comixology Originals, make sure to keep an eye out for it when it's in print form. And gentlemen, thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to us. And definitely we have to have you come back on at the end of the series and recap what's been going down.
Absolutely. And if you don't mind, if you don't want to dig through Comixology to get there, you can just go to hardstylejuice.com and it'll redirect you right to the Amazon page.
Oh, and it's free to read if you have Amazon Prime.
Yeah, there you go. That is very true.
Even better reason. And yes, actually, the website is in the liner notes for this episode, too. So we'll definitely be having a lot of fans going over there, because trust me, when you pick this issue up and you check it out, you're going to be blown away by the art. The writing is so good. It has so many different elements into it that it's not just for a pro wrestling fan. It's not for just a crime fan. It's not just for a comic book fan. It's just for anybody that's into great storytelling, no matter what your spectrum is. So you definitely want to make sure you go check this out as soon as you can on Comixology Originals. And then obviously when it comes out in print form, buy a few copies. You won't be disappointed. So gentlemen, thank you again. Thank you to my co-host, Rich. You'll see him every Thursday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Wrestling Night Live. And we'll end this with a little twist like we do on every issue of Turn of Page. When you're at the comic shop, you better bring a tablet, because if you see somebody struggling to find something, get Hard Style Juice lined up, hand yours off to them, and tell them to turn a page. We'll see you next time.
It's such a waste of time, swiping left and swiping right on people you could know. Is anyone who's worth a damn be worth way more than a picture could ever show? You could find the right light, find the right angle, and never find your soul. And it can feel like a losing battle, and this plot is full of holes. This modern way of finding love just makes me feel so alone. And I can't be the only one sick of staring at my phone. So look up, talk to me. Time fables, everyone has just one true love. All I know is you're across this table, and you're all I'm thinking of. So look up, talk to me. A better way to spend our energy. Just look up, talk to me. Swiping left and swiping right on people you could know.